This is the State of Things. I'm Frank Stachow. Last night, presidential hopefuls Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton traded barbs about a number of subjects, including America's economic strength. It's one of the big issues in the presidential race and one of the most important topics for many Americans. Throughout this election season, we're participating in a national conversation along with other NPR member stations. It is called A Nation Engaged. And today we're asking the question, what can we do to create economic opportunity for more Americans? Well, one possible answer is turning ownership of businesses over to workers. Joining me now to talk about worker-owned companies is Melissa Hoover. She's the executive director of the Democracy at Work Institute. Hello, Melissa.
Hi, good morning.
Good to have you. Also with me, Thomas Beckett, co-director of the Carolina Common Enterprise. It's a firm that focuses on advising individuals and communities who want to form cooperative organizations. Hello, Thomas.
Good morning, Frank.
And with us is Molly Hemstreet. She is founder and member owner of Opportunity Threads, a worker-owned textile plant in Morganton, North Carolina. Hello, Molly.
Hi.
Tell us, Molly, how you came to found Opportunity Threads. And it's in Burke County, right?
Yes, that's right. Again, thank you for the opportunity to have this discussion. So my name is Molly Hemstreet, and I'm from Morganton, North Carolina, proud to be born and bred there and continue to live and work there. And I grew up in an interesting time in North Carolina when it was really in the 90s when things were, particularly in textiles and furniture, work was really still thriving in our counties. And then it was in the late 90s into 2000 when, particularly in our region of North Carolina, we lost over 47,000 jobs within just four counties. So I had the privilege of going to Duke University, and I walked back into this economic situation as a public school teacher. I think you were talking about public schools earlier, and it was really interesting to see for me how the connection between education and economics and just how unstable a community is when there's not wealth that's deeply rooted in a community. And I became really driven by that question of how do we create sustainable work and how do we create work that isn't easily extracted from our communities. And for me, a lot of that answer came into this idea of, well, the labor and the capital and the decision making needs to rest with the workers and the plants. So I was able to start, with the help of many other wonderful people in North Carolina, a worker-owned cut and sew plant that's based in Burke County.
Tell us a little bit about how it works before you do that, because I do want to hear a little bit about what that means to be worker-owned and how big the business is. But I think I want to highlight a couple of things you said. You talked about extraction of labor and what happens when these factories move out. When things are thriving and everybody has a job and they're pretty well paid, you kind of don't notice that you don't own the work and you don't own the facilities. And then when they decide it's time to go, the actual owners pick up and leave, and suddenly you're all left with nothing. And the work has been extracted, and the wealth has gone with them. And so in a worker-owned business, I guess the wealth stays in the community because people are building equity in this, and the owners are you, right?
Exactly. And I remember, you know, very distinctly just companies that, you know, 500 people plants where they would be told on a Friday that their plant would be closing on Monday. And you're right. You start to see when everything's going okay, that's great. But then you start to see how easily work can be taken out of communities. So what is the solution to that? And I think fundamentally it's a shift in how labor is not only organized, but then the equity and the decision making, how those are rooted within a company. So we started out, I was lucky that I was able to work with a worker center, actually that my husband had started here. And so there were several workers. We have worked closely with the Latino community, and they were Mayan, Guatemalan immigrants that were working in our community, and they were interested in helping get this plant started because a lot of them also come from sewing heritage. So we incubated with one little sewing machine and a worker center, and then it really took off because not only do we have sewers that were very good and people that were interested in this model? But I think there's also a real demand, a real eagerness for people wanting from a demand side, as we are able to educate consumers more and more, that they want to know that their labor is fair. We heard just about the local food movement. I think other industries, like our heritage industries of textiles and furniture, are also following in that same conversation of how do we how are we sure that our decision-making and the decisions we're making are supporting workers on the ground? So we started with one, just a handful of workers, and then the first plant we actually moved into was a plant that was a sewing facility when I was a kid. I remember driving by there, and we were able to move into it. It was about 2,000 square feet. And then we've actually just moved into 10,000 square feet. We have 23 workers. About half of those are worker owners or candidates for worker ownership. And the other folks or employees are in the process of becoming worker owners.
So what is
and
it?
They buy in.
But sure, tell us about that. Yeah, you're about to tell me, I guess, sure. What it means to be a worker owner and how you buy in.
Yeah, so a lot of it's a cultural shift. You know, it's not for everybody, but I think particularly in that growing field of where we see manufacturing growing, it's in those plants of 25, you know, to 50 people. So it's these small plants where we really see the ripeness of this opportunity and the ripeness for where people who can, you know, really be a voice and take on their ownership and leadership in their plants. So we buy in at $5,000. Part of that is sweat equity. Part of that comes out of your paycheck every week. We are governed by an elected board that's made up of owners, and then our management and our governance comes out of that. So I think it's really important in this conversation. It's not just this kind of flat structure where everybody is making all decisions all the time. I think particularly in manufacturing, you know, you really have to run a lean plant. And we're not just successful because we've been, you know, structured as a worker-owned firm. We're really successful also because we live in a place where there's a lot of industrial knowledge around textiles. We can capture a lot of that. The infrastructure is still here. And so it's important that we're also a very lean firm. We know how to run a good plant. We know how to produce a good quality product on time. And in addition to that, we are worker-owned.
Thomas Beckett, you collaborated with Molly to help get this thing going and work with them. Tell us a little bit about the challenges of creating this kind of a business.
Well, with cooperative or worker cooperative in particular, there's this difficulty in sort of getting to the point where you have a bankable business plan, just the planning of the business, that type of thing. Opportunity Thread started on a shoestring and a lot of gumption, and you know, also some good support in their community. So part of what we're seeing is we need to have some support. And we're fortunate in North Carolina to have a lot of that entrepreneurial assistance available, but it's generally focused on, you know, sort of the single entrepreneur who has an idea and is willing to put up their house in order to, you know, essentially bet the farm on the success of the business. With a cooperative, you've got a group of people doing that together. There's a steeper learning curve because in addition to planning the business, you need to learn how to work as a group, how to function well cooperatively.
Yeah, and also, so that's part of it, the cultural shift, I think, that Molly was talking about, getting everybody to understand what it means to have an equity stake, what it means to have a voice, and, you know, some important decisions that have to be made, how to structure that. But the capital is the other thing you made reference to. If I start a small business in the conventional way, you're going to go out and look for some VC, venture capital, meaning they're going to have an equity stake in your company. They're going to own it or part of it. And as you start to get bigger, your options are kind of to sell out because you've already chopped a piece of this company and given it away, which means, to me, it might be less attractive to an investor to say, I'd like to invest in this business that you are going to own, not me.
Yeah, I mean, there is this sort of myth of the heroic entrepreneur in our country that's built around, you know, somebody who has this super-duper idea and attracts investors and promises to make them all, as well as herself or himself, rich in the process. It's more of a financial play than it is really about entrepreneurship. With a cooperative, you've got people that are trying to build their own livelihoods. It's not so much that we're offering an opportunity for someone to make lots of money. We're creating an opportunity for ourselves to build value and a livelihood for ourselves and for the community. So there's not this tremendous exit. So I think with cooperatives, we're, you know, not only, you know, we're looking for startup capital, but it's more in the way of a bank loan or a, you know, non-control investment.
So you'd pay it back with interest, but you don't get a stake in the company because
right.
the workers own that.
Well, Melissa, you don't get a vote.
Melissa Hoover, let me talk with you as Executive Director of Democracy at Work Institute. Give us a sense of the scope. How much is, we're talking about one company in North Carolina. I know there are others. Nationally, what does it look like, cooperative-owned businesses? Are they growing?
Thank you. Yeah, hi. they are growing. The Democracy at Work Institute is a national organization supporting that growth in what we hope are strategic directions. So we know that there are about 400 worker-owned businesses, worker co-ops in the country. Most of them are small. There are a handful of really large ones. The largest worker co-op is a home care co-op in New York City. It has about 2,500 employees, and about half of those are members. And what we're seeing is that that kind of business is emblematic of the nature, the growth in worker co-ops. So whereas maybe 20 or 30 years ago, people were using the cooperative form to sort of create an alternative to exit the economy, people with maybe access to resources and a political perspective on what they wanted to create. What we're seeing now is that people are using the co-op form more to enter the economy, people who are locked out of good jobs, who may be locked out of jobs at all. They're seeing co-ops as a tool to remove the kind of barriers that your earlier guests were talking about, barriers to participation, to ownership, and to work.
Opportunity Threads is a manufacturing business. You referenced one of the larger co-ops is in the service industry, healthcare. How does it break down in terms of co-ops? Are most in the service? Are many in the manufacturing businesses?
Well, I think co-ops as small businesses follow the same trends as the rest of the larger economy. So as we've shifted from a manufacturing economy to a service economy, that same shift, we've seen that same shift in the worker co-op community. However, there's a really interesting thing happening, which is that co-ops are being used as a tool to sort of revitalize or regenerate the manufacturing sector in some places. And I think secondarily, they're being used as a tool to save those manufacturing businesses that may not have any other options. They may not have outside buyers, not because they're not good businesses, but for any number of reasons, investors aren't interested in buying them, and the owners don't want to sell them for parts or shut the doors. So that's where we're seeing co-ops come in as an intervention in the manufacturing sector for the most part.
Does that suggest that they're actually being converted rather than starting from the ground up?
That's right. Yeah. That's right. I mean, we do see co-ops as a startup. You know, there's a trend in startup cooperatives, but when we looked at the membership numbers of the National Co-op Organization, the U.S. Federation of Worker Co-ops, we found that about 40% of them were actually converted from existing conventional businesses, which is, you know, in many ways a win-win-win. The owners get to exit the business and their legacy is preserved. The workers then take it over and have a way of generating wealth and owning their own company. And the community keeps the doors open of a business that might otherwise have closed, usually an anchor business in a main street corridor in a rural area.
I was going to ask Molly Hemstreet at Opportunity Threads in Western North Carolina, have you seen an impact? I know you've only been around for a while, but in terms of its impact on the community and influence on other businesses.
Sure. So I would say what we really try to do, because I think you're right, we want to be more than just, you know, one small plant of 25 people. Although we think there's something very unique about a small plant and our ability to be flexible in responding to demand in terms of the market demand that is there. So what we've really done is taken a sector strategy, and we've a second business that we've built is called the Carolina Textile District. And what it is it's a value chain, or you take a supply chain. As you were talking about, too, with the agricultural sector, you take a supply chain, you layer on a certain, you know, concept of shared values, and it becomes this value chain of where you're still independent and autonomous, but you're linked together. And so what we are really trying to able to do is not just influence our neighborhood and our small community, which I think we have been able to do. We have some great allies in our small government and through the business center with our economic development entity, but to really start to influence an industry and a sector by taking our small company and by being part of this larger value chain, which we have helped to found. And what we're starting to see there is now people have the permission and now have the tools as well to ask questions about how we do conversions and how we do startups in a more equitable way that's more labor-centric, that's less extractive. And, you know, we're teaching classes on how to do that. So from a business to a business, we're teaching other folks on how to do cooperative development in an industry-specific way. And I think Thomas can share the story a little bit about one of the conversions that we're working with that's within the textile sector.
One of the conversions, Thomas, but also give us a sense of what's going on in North Carolina and how things are changing.
Well, I think nationally, and Melissa can attest to this, there's, you know, this what we call the silver tsunami of baby boom business owners that are looking for an exit, and you know, part of the nature of that generation is they're looking for a meaningful exit, and a lot of folks don't necessarily want to just sell out or sell off their brand. They want to have a legacy and have a positive contribution that they left in the world, and so one option with that is to sell the business to their workforce.
Right.
It's not a perfect fit for every business, but it's a good idea for a lot of businesses. And as Melissa said, it's a cash exit for the owner. You are retaining jobs and potentially even growing the business. And that business is then anchored in the community.
What's the landscape here in North Carolina? Is it changing?
There are opportunities. We talk to people. We could really be doing a lot more outreach if we had the capacity to meet the demand we think is out there. We facilitated a conversion here in Durham, a small business that sort of a specialty retailer, electric violin shop, smart people, great business. It was that exact same scenario where the owner just was looking for an exit and successfully transferred the business to the workforce there. And they have plans to potentially grow the business and do great things. We're working with an apparel business in Burlington where you have a really dynamic, visionary owner. TS Designs, you know, created the idea of dirt to shirt, cotton of the Carolinas. And he's looking for a path to retirement and is doing that by converting the business.
I want to thank you all for being on the program. Thomas Beckett, co-director of Carolina Common Enterprise. Molly Hemstreet is started and helps to start Opportunity Threads, a worker-owned textile plant in Morganton. And Melissa Hoover, executive director of Democracy at Work Institute. Thank all of you for being on the program.
My pleasure.
Thank you so much.
And thank you for listening to The State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, which is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. You can find out more information about worker-owned cooperatives at our website, stateofthings.org. I'm Frank Stachow.